Welcome to the Fantasy Baseball Today podcast from CBS Sports.
High drive, center field, hit the wall, grand slam. This is magnificent.
Got a fantasy question? Email fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Get ready to win your league.
Where fantasy becomes reality.
Now, here's Frank, Scott, Chris, and Adam.
Hey there, everybody. Happy Monday. Welcome to Fantasy Baseball Today on May 18th. Frank Stanfill, a.k.a. Postage, a.k.a. the Tramp Stamp, whatever you want to call me. Here with Scotty Dubs, Scott White, and the returning CPT. Chris, it's been a while. How's it going, man?
Hey, guys. Yeah, sorry for missing most of last week's podcast. We had our deadline for our fantasy football magazine, but I literally seconds before logging on to the call, sent the last proof to the printer. So now I'm good. I'm focusing on baseball for the next probably 2 months, really, just all baseball. So wow. You guys got me.
And all baseball, you know, all the time.
I'll still be worried about baseball after that.
Yeah, and hopefully there's baseball to talk about. We're still waiting to hear back again. It is Monday, May 18th, so there's going to be some back and forth. This is going to take some time, obviously, but, you know, once a season is announced, we will have an emergency podcast there for you. So make sure, again, that you're subscribing here. Leave a little 5-star Apple Podcast review. Why not? For your guys here, Fantasy Baseball Today. Scott, I'm a little sad today, not going to lie. The Last Dance is over. I enjoyed it thoroughly because I was too young to watch Michael Jordan live, obviously. Has there been a show that has genuinely made you sad when it ended?
Oh, yeah.
What Every do you show. Got? Every show?
Every single show, yeah. I've never finished a show and been like, well, I'm relieved that's over. Gosh, don't have to do that anymore.
I definitely have. There are some shows that you kind of watch out of a sense of obligation, and then by the time you get through it, you're just like season two of True Detective. Season one was so good that I gave season two the benefit of the doubt through the entire thing, all the way to the end. And at the end of every episode, my wife, it was the only show we watched live. And at the end of every episode, my wife and I would turn to each other and be like, why are we spending our time doing this? And we did it every week. And it never paid itself off.
I think maybe, I don't know, it's a CBS show, so maybe I shouldn't say this, but I think maybe it was kind of that way with How I Met Your Mother, because it just went on so long, probably about 3 seasons too long. And then the ending is notoriously bad. And it's just like, well, at least that's something I don't have to make time to do anymore. So I do remember having kind of an experience like that with that one.
I do. I love that show and all CBS programming that way.
Look at that. Model employee Chris Towers back on the show. Today on the show, speaking of which, we are going to do MLB team word association. As many teams as we could possibly get to, so that's going to be a lot of fun. We have some news and notes, basically just Cardinals news and notes, and then some of your emails later on, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. But some of those news and notes, St. Louis Cardinals, according to Mark Saxon of The Athletic, Miles Michaelis should be ready if play resumes. Michaelis had this to say, everything's going well. If you look at June 10th-ish for spring training and early to mid-July, which has been reported, but we don't know if that's actually going to happen, as the point of return, from what I understand, for a season, I think I should be ready to go. Michaelis was recovering from a strained flexor tendon in his right forearm, which is usually a precursor for something much worse, but he's opted to just rehab and not have any type of surgery, so it seems like that's going well. Something that also went well was his 2018, a 2.83 ERA. The pendulum swung all the way the other way, Scott, with a 4.16 ERA last season. I guess we haven't really talked about Michaelis, but he is one of these names, one of these other names that does benefit from the long layoff. Do you plan to move him back up the ranks at all? He seems like more of a head-to-head points starting pitcher than a roto guy for me.
You know, I was doing a lot of massaging on my starting pitcher rankings on Friday, and Miles Michaelis was somebody who just kept getting moved down for other pitchers. I have no enthusiasm for Miles Michaelis this year. I feel like last year was closer to what he probably should have been even in his first year. You know, the main thing he brings to the table is a great ground ball rate. Good control, too. So he's like really good on two of those three FIP measurements. But actually, he took kind of a step back as a ground ball pitcher last year, so the home runs were kind of a problem for him. And he's the strikeout rate is so low. He's kind of like a poor man's Marcus Stroman, I feel like. And Stroman himself, it's hard to get enthusiastic about him. A little easier in a points league. But then, like, the poor man's version of him, not so much.
That is definitely fair. I can't argue with you moving Miles Michaelis down the rankings. Some other news from the St. Louis Cardinals. Prospects Nolan Gorman and Matthew Liberatore are not expected to make the expanded roster for the Cardinals. I think that's pretty much expected. I mean, Liberatore is still a few years away. And Gorman, someone that people are very excited about. Another one where, you know, maybe he'll start in Double A, but might not make sense for him to make it, at least this season. And lastly, Will Laws of SI.com reports that Matt Carpenter is a natural candidate for the Cardinals' DH job. I think that makes a lot of sense, which means Tommy Edman could be their everyday third baseman. Helps all parties involved, Edman, Carpenter, Tyler O'Neill, Dylan Carlson, hopefully in the outfield. So there's your dose of St. Louis Cardinals updates here on Fantasy Baseball Today. I mentioned we were going to do MLB team word association. I just want to jump right in. I want to try and get to as many teams as we possibly can. You know, if you haven't...
Good. You got the two longest winded on with you, so this will go well.
word association, if you haven't played, it's pretty simple. It's somebody says a word. What's the first thing that pops into your head? For example, I say red. Chris Tower says...
Blue.
All right.
Did I get it right?
Not necessarily what I was expecting, but I will throw out a random team. I actually created this Wheel of Fortune type thing on a website, and it'll rotate around.
An actual spinning wheel?
It is an actual spinning wheel. I guess I can turn the volume up, and maybe you guys will hear it in the background. I don't know how well that will play out on the podcast, but it does make some noises, there is a wheel, and every time I'll spin the wheel, I will present the team, and then either Chris or Scott, I guess we'll go back and forth, we'll throw out a player, and we'll talk about said player for a few minutes, and we'll try and get to as many teams as we possibly can. I had this idea because recently on Twitter, people have been posting old school team logos, like basketball teams.
Yeah.
And I saw the Florida Marlins was trending. Their logo was trending. So shout out to Chris. There's another one for you.
I think it started with the Expos.
The Expos.
I think that was the first one.
And there's only one answer for the Expos.
It's
Bartolo Colon.
What?
I honestly
think of Vladimir Guerrero.
The first one who comes to mind with that logo for me is Mike Lansing. I don't know why. He just seems like the embodiment of Expos baseball.
Mark Grudzelonic.
I think of him pretty high too, yeah.
So Chris
Nick Johnson.
Chris, when you see the old Florida Marlins logo, who do you think of?
Oh, probably Hanley Ramirez.
That's fair. Yeah, I thought of Miguel Cabrera, who's just the first name that pops into my head.
I think of Jeff Conine.
Yeah, for me, it would be like Hanley, Gary Sheffield, who only played there for like 2.5 years, or Dontrell Willis. But that's just because those are my three favorite players, probably. Well, Jose Fernandez, but he didn't wear the old logo.
That makes sense.
He did for a little while.
Nope.
No?
Nope. He was only a Miami Marlin.
I'll take your word for it.
But anyway, Anthony, someone who is a longtime supporter of FPT, he responded to one of my tweets and said, "You guys should do this on the show." And I said, "Sure, why not?" So here we are. This is how we have arrived at this destination. All right, I'm going to turn my volume up, see if you guys can hear the wheel spinning or not. Are you guys ready?
My expectations for the audio portion of this are not very high.
Probably not. Let's go with Chris first. Welcome him back to the show. Let's see what we got. Do you guys hear this?
Nope.
Not even a little bit. Not even a little bit. All right, Chris, are you ready?
Yes.
Your team is the Oakland A's.
Ricky Henderson. Are we supposed to do active players?
Yes, active players.
active players. So we can talk about them.
I mean, we can talk about Ricky Henderson if you want to, but...
I mean, I always want to talk about Ricky Henderson. Okay, let's go with K-Riss Davis.
K-Riss Davis. One of my favorite values in fantasy baseball this season. Somebody who I wound up with on my Tout Wars team. ADP for K-Riss Davis right now, 169.2. seems like he's a little bit left for dead here in fantasy baseball this season. Maybe there's a chance he's starting to fall off. 32 years old. I think last year was a product of him running into that wall in Safeco. I don't know what it might be, like T-Mobile Park now in Seattle. But he ran into the wall there trying to make a catch. He hurt his hip on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, actually, last season. And he was never the same after that. So, Scott, Chris Davis, someone who I love to target if you need home runs late in a roto draft. Even in a points league, he's not ideal because he strikes out a lot. But if he can get back to hitting 35 home runs at that point in the draft, he's a great value.
Yeah, he's kind of a no-risk pick. And I think you guys have had an influence on me because I took him for the first time in our 10-team roto mock draft that we recently did. That was the first time I've taken him the entire draft prep season. I'm not exactly an optimist. I feel like the drop-off doesn't clearly coincide with the injury, which makes me a little skeptical that you could pin it all on that. I mean, he didn't miss that much time with the injury, but of course it's possible it caused him to change his mechanics subtly and fall apart from there. It's a profile that depends on him hitting a crap load of home runs. So anything less than a crap load, he's going to be pretty useless in fantasy. And that's what we discovered last year. And that's a tightrope walk trying to, produce that many year after year, especially as he's now entering his mid-30s here. So I'm not a Chris Davis optimist, but I get the lack of downside with where he's going, and it could potentially pay big dividends.
So one thing I would say and maybe take issue with is he was on pace for 46 home runs on May 5th. The overall slash line was a little low. It was just 784 OPS. However, that was because he was hitting 229 with a 238 BABIP. That was mostly the issue. From that point on, he played 98 games. He basically played through the injury. From that point on, he was on a 21 homer pace with a 217 batting average with a 274 BABIP. So I do think a little bit of bad BABIP luck explains most of why he wasn't off to a resounding start. You know, he hit basically two home runs in his third game back from that injury. And then I don't think he hit another home run for like 15 games.
But the thing is, he went before May 5th, he had gone 3 weeks without hitting a home run. It had been, and maybe he just happened to be cold and then he got hurt. Or maybe the decline had nothing to do with the hip injury.
Yeah, I don't know. He's been so consistent that it's hard for me to look at it and say when he suffered that injury, especially if he hadn't suffered the injury, and yes, he hadn't homered for 3 weeks. However, that happens sometimes. Like I would guess that's one of the longer homerless streaks he's had in recent years. But that just, yeah, sometimes that happens. So I don't know how much to put on that. He homered once in the first 12 games of the 2018 season. So that doesn't concern me as much. I really do think the hip is the issue.
Yeah. Maybe at 32 years old, he is starting to decline a little bit, but I think the change in batted ball data is something that you can draw to the hip injury. The fact that he couldn't elevate the ball as much as he usually does. Last season, a 37% fly ball rate, whereas the previous four seasons before that, he was up over 40%. And in 2018, he had a near 49% fly ball rate. So I think that hip injury kind of affected his ability to lift the ball and do what he normally does. So Chris Davis is somebody that I do like a decent amount, and I actually do trust as a bounce back. Scott, are you ready to spin the wheel?
Let's spin the wheel.
Spin that wheel. And
big money, big money.
The Red Sox.
The Red Sox. I'm going to go. Do I really have to go with the first name that came to mind because it was JD Martinez? Is that how we're going to do this?
Or yeah, pick probably. They're probably more interesting.
Yeah, let's
That's not the game, though. We don't have to talk about JD Martinez for long, do we? All right, Alex Verdugo, fine.
All right, Alex Verdugo, ADP 229.8, came over in the Mookie Betts trade, and we did have some update recently from Alex Verdugo, and it sounds like things are trending in the right direction. Another player who should benefit from the long layoff here if things get started back up.
Yeah, actually, 2 weeks ago, I missed this completely, but 2 weeks ago, Alex Verdugo said he's 100% ready to play baseball.
Yeah, Chris, I know that you're very excited about Alex Verdugo, and I think there's a chance he can, maybe not his first season as a full-time player, but I think what his peak could look like is something similar to Michael Brantley. High line drive rate, lots of contact, performed very well against left-handed pitching last year, just didn't get the opportunity to play every day because he was with the Dodgers.
Yeah, I think he could be someone playing in Fenway Park, especially half his games, a park that boosts BABIP more than any park in baseball besides Coors Field. I think he could be someone who challenges for batting titles playing there. And I think, you know, obviously the back injury tempers my 2020 hopes a little bit because you never want to see that with a young player. And those are the kind of injuries that can tend to linger and have knock-on effects. But if he had been fully healthy coming into the 2020 season, I think he would have been a top 150 pick. I think he's that kind of talent in that kind of situation. You know, the Red Sox won't be the number four offense in baseball, but they won't be that bad. Now, losing Mookie Betts hurts, but he's not their best hitter. You know, he's been that once or twice, but, you know, I think it's fair to say JD Martinez is probably their best hitter. And if what we saw from Rafael Devers last, like, this is still a team that has a handful of really, really high profile bats, especially at the top of the lineup. So I think it's a perfect landing spot for his fantasy value. And I think something like 295, 300, 20 homers and 10 steals over the course of a full season is entirely within the realm of possibility.
And that sounds a lot like Michael Brantley.
It does. I think that's a good comp. I'm most excited to draft him in deeper points leagues, Verdugo, that is. You know, which isn't to say Brantley isn't more exciting in points leagues either, but specifically deeper points leagues, because I worry that Park isn't going to be good for a left-handed hitter who already has a questionable power profile. And with, you know, if you can't pencil him in for 20 homers in today's environment, I think his fantasy value is going to be largely a matter of where he hits in the lineup. And I suspect it'll be pretty low in the lineup to start out. Maybe he moves up as the season plays out, but I suspect it'll be pretty low at the start. So I do think it's a good batting average. It's going to be a low strikeout rate, of course, and that helps in those points leagues. But is he going to be a top 40-ish type outfielder? You know, unless he gets a lot of at-bats, a lot of run-scoring opportunities, I'm not sure the power is going to be there. It'll take some improved elevation on the ball. And again, the odds are long in that park for a left-handed hitter.
Well, it should help, Scott, that he plays in the American League East overall, because he'll get Yankee Stadium, he'll get Camden, he'll get Rogers Center, and obviously just much better ballparks to hit in. We said that last week regarding the American League East. Probably the best division in terms of ballparks for hitters to hit in. And as of now, Roster Resource has him projected to bat seventh, but it really wouldn't surprise me that if he got off to a good start, if they move him up to fifth, because as of now they have Mitch Moreland penciled in to bat fifth. So that wouldn't surprise me.
I think at this point, I think Verdugo versus Benintendi, like, who would I rather have batting at the top of the lineup?
It'd be Verdugo for me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
that's fair. And then you can move Benintendi down and, you know, try and create some run scoring opportunities for him.
So I definitely see a path to him being a leadoff type hitter for the Red Sox, but, you know, are they going, just because I see it doesn't mean they will.
Yeah. One thing, you know, and Benintendi seems like a natural comp for Verdugo, left-handed, strong contact profiles, playing in a bad park for power that has held Benintendi back somewhat, but Verdugo did hit the ball harder than Benintendi last season. He's just a bigger guy in general. And so, you know, I don't think raw power is really the issue for him. He doesn't elevate the ball a ton, which that'll hold him back somewhat, but he also does hit a decent amount of his fly balls out to left field, which is a little better for when you're talking about home runs.
Doubles, he could. Another reason why he might be a points league stud, because the doubles could be, you know, a guy on a 50 plus pace potentially.
All right, Chris, are you ready for team number three?
No.
Okay, spin that wheel.
I'm not good at this game.
Spin that wheel. The Mariners.
Oh my God! For some reason, okay. I need to explain what just happened to me. I need to explain what happened to me. A name came to mind.
It looked like your brain kind of shut off for a second.
Was it Dave Henderson?
I was so offended at the name that my brain came up with because it was Franklin Gutierrez.
What?
And I have no idea why that's the answer, but the actual answer would be Yusei Kikuchi.
Oof.
Ah,
we so you say. Really talked about. I don't know if his name has been mentioned at all on this podcast since like May of last season.
Oh, I'm sure we talked about him during spring training because
it was a rhetorical flourish, Scott.
Okay, sorry, I took you literally. Sorry. He was a guy who was getting some hype this spring. Forget last spring, this spring, because he showed up throwing like 3 miles per hour harder with his fastball. And a lot of it had to do with, you know, obviously they're on a very different schedule in Japan. They only start once a week and they throw more in between starts. And, you know, he wanted to adapt more of a routine that he was used to from over there. And he convinced the Mariners coaching staff to let him do that. And I don't know if that entirely explains it, but yeah, he was throwing harder. You gain that much velocity on your fastball. I mean, that has the potential to be transformative, certainly. And he's supposed to have a good slider. It didn't really play up last year. Nothing really played up for last year. It was a total disaster, but there's a reason why he was so hyped coming over from Japan and got a multi-year deal and all of that. And, you know, what do you have to lose at starting pitcher is the thing. You get to a point in those starting pitcher rankings where, like, more likely than not, everybody you draft, you're probably going to drop for somebody else down the line anyway. So yeah. Kikuchi doesn't seem like any worse of a gamble than anyone else once you reach that stage of the draft.
Yeah, and the issue for him last year really was just, you know, he started off averaging about 94 miles per hour with his fastball in his first handful of starts. But, you know, from that point on, it dropped to really the 92 range. And, you know, he worked with Driveline Baseball this offseason, which is, you know, generally considered to be one of the better places if you want to simplify your mechanics and develop a new pitch. And, yeah, it doesn't sound like it really increased his maximum velocity. You know, last year he hit 97 a few times with his fastball. I think the thing we're looking for is more of that consistency and the reports out of spring were that he was regularly hitting 95 rather than maxing out. And the slider has been, you know, in the high 90s and even hitting as high as 91 at times. So, you know, that's where I think that the advantage and the key to any kind of breakout would be for Kikuchi.
Yeah, Kikuchi was terrible last season. His first season in Major League Baseball, a 5.46 ERA, 1.52 WHIP, the strikeouts per nine, 6.46. So really did not do a whole bunch of anything last season. But somebody that, you know, in deeper leagues, deeper sleeper, Kikuchi, you know, ADP 396.3, Friday I highlighted some starting pitchers who made adjustments last season, and I also highlighted Justice Sheffield as someone who made an adjustment this spring. I easily could have included Yusei Kikuchi in that mix, and I do like both of those guys, both Kikuchi and Justice Sheffield, just as late-round targets as guys who have upside. The reasons you mentioned, improved velocity for Kikuchi this spring, and he changed his mechanics and everything. So I think there is a little bit something there, especially at his ADP.
Priorities among sleeper pitchers, like, we're talking behind like Mitch Keller, Dylan Cease, behind Astros duo, Verchitti and James. But you know, you get below that, you start getting into like the J Happ type sleepers. I think you could think about Kikuchi at that point.
I do think the upside for Kikuchi is probably not dissimilar to Urquidy. You know, it's not the huge strikeout potential of Mitch Keller and Dylan Cease, and Nate Pearson will throw in there now. But, you know, Urquidy seems safer. But in terms of the upside, I think that's a fair comp.
All right, we have more team word association we're going to get to right after this quick break. The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads. Nothing beats a weekend away with the family in the great outdoors, whether it's camping, hiking, river rafting, or anything in between. With third-row seating, nobody is left out. The entire family can experience the thrill together. And nobody wants a dead phone. Available dual wireless charging pads make it so nobody gets stuck and we can check our fantasy baseball teams together. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we're back. We just talked about the Seattle Mariners and Yusei Kikuchi, and that means, Scott, you are ready to spin that wheel. Are you ready?
I'm ready. Spin it.
We are spinning the wheel, and it lands on the Milwaukee Brewers.
Ah, the Milwaukee Brewers, and of course, that player that's so fun to talk about, Lorenzo Cain. That's someone we don't talk about much.
Lorenzo Cain, ADP 181. 0.6, getting up there a little bit in age, is Lorenzo Cain. Missed some time last year. He's 34 years old now at this point. Played 148 games, 11 home runs, 18 steals with a .260 batting average, just a .697 OPS. That was his lowest since 2013. So, Scott, I mean, was this the beginning of the end for Lorenzo Cain, or do you think he just got nicked up a little bit too much and that affected his production last year? Because there's a lot of people that like Lorenzo Cain as a bounce back candidate because he's going as late as he is entering the season.
Look, when a guy who's 34 years old turns in the worst season in recent memory, I assume it's probably the beginning of the end. But his defensive, you know, he's still graded very high defensively, so it wasn't a clear loss of athleticism there. His strikeout rate was still low. It looks like, just by the traditional way we measure these things, that he had bad luck on balls in play. He ran a lot less. I could definitely see the case that he bounces back, just because, you know, it seems like he had bad luck on balls in play. The issues for me, the biggest issues for me, and why I'm not totally going crazy for him in drafts, is because of that decline in stolen bases. He went from 30 to 18, and it was only 18 out of 26. It was not a good rate. How much is he going to run from this point forward, a guy in his mid-30s? Not super optimistic about that, but of course it's possible, and in the range he's going, you're not going to find many bankable steals threats anyway. The other thing I'm worried about with him is there was some talk of, because he's at an age that he is now, giving him more frequent time off and using Avisaíl García in center field in his place. Now, how much of that was just, here's a way to get García, Braun, and Smoke in the lineup at the same time, which isn't going to be an issue anymore with the introduction of the DH, and how much of it was genuinely, this guy is getting older, he needs more rest? I'm not sure. But if Cain isn't playing as regularly and he's not running as much, it almost doesn't matter what happens to the batting average. I don't think he's going to make a big enough impact in fantasy.
Man, obviously Garcia playing center field would be really rough. So, yeah.
But the Brewers don't care about defense. They've proved that the past couple of years. Travis Shaw at second base, Mike Moustakas at second base. They basically sacrifice defense and just try and get the best lineup they possibly can.
At second base, I think that's something we see more around baseball as teams are willing to sacrifice second base defense because with, better shifting approaches and more effective predictive analytics, you can kind of cover for a lot of that. But you can't do that quite as much in center field. But,
the Rays gave him 10 starts in center field last year, for what it's worth.
Yeah. I don't know. It seems like it won't work out. But, the big thing for Kane is it really hinges on whether he can stay healthy, I think. And that's not just, can he stay in the lineup? It's, last year he got 620 something plate appearances. He played quite a lot. It was just, he was playing through a wrist injury, which I think explains most of the dip in his batting stats, but he also played through ankle and knee injuries throughout the season. And so that seems like a sign of a guy who's just kind of breaking down, but it doesn't necessarily mean that it will be the case in 2020. And so I do like him a lot as a bounce back candidate. The fact that he didn't decline all that much defensively, if at all, that does seem to indicate that there is some athleticism still there.
Yeah, for Lorenzo Cain last year, the outs above average, still 99th percentile. His outfield jump, 79th percentile. Expected batting average, 88th percentile. So he was still up there in some StatCast metrics, which proved there might be something left in the tank for Lorenzo Cain. I think he's somebody who, if we're talking about a 162-game season, could get to 12 home runs, 20 steals. I think that's still doable for him with a 280 plus batting average. I think that's all fair.
For what? For how long of a season?
If it were a full season, I think
he can.
10 to 12 home runs.
Season, he could do that.
20 steals, 280 plus. Which
I
is
mean,
a solid
I think he could do more than that. It's just you have to be nervous when a guy this old has a season that underwhelming. That takes that big of a step back.
All right, Chris, Mr. Franklin Gutierrez, what do you have left in the tank? Are you ready?
Yeah, let's do it.
Spin that wheel. We are spinning. What do we got? Where are we landing? We are going with the Let's Go Mets. Chris is in deep thought.
Man, I just like, because the first one that came to mind was J.D. Davis, and I don't want to talk about J.D. Davis. We can't do that.
I'm sure Scott does.
The second one who came to mind was Noah Syndergaard. That one we can't talk about. It has no bearing on the 2020 season. So we're going to talk about, the third one was Edwin Diaz.
Ah, of course, a Chris favorite.
Edwin Diaz, indeed a Chris favorite. ADP at 120.6. And Edwin Diaz was somebody who I was completely off of 2 years ago, and he made me look silly, absolutely silly. And then last year was more of what I was worried about for Diaz entering 2018. But you basically were given in the past two seasons his floor and his ceiling. His ceiling, 1.96 ERA, 0.79 whip, 57 saves in 2018. Then last season, 5.59 ERA, 1.38 whip, 26 saves, struggled to throw a slider, talked about the change in baseball. Chris, as much as you want to like him, the Mets do have some great options behind him should he falter. So there is a level of concern when it comes to Edwin Diaz.
In theory, they have some great options. They've got Dellin Betances coming back from a partially torn Achilles. They've got
Seth Lugo, who
is good, but like, I don't think using him as your closer is getting the best value from him. I don't know. Maybe last year revealed some unforeseen flaw in Edwin Diaz that will carry through the rest of his career and derail what looked like a very promising career. But this wasn't like he lost 5 miles per hour on his fastball. This was just, he couldn't grip his slider. And the slider still got a ton of swing and misses. It was still one of the best swings and miss pitches in baseball. The problem with it was that he gave up like 9 home runs with his slider. And that's really bad. You don't want to give up 9 home runs with your slider. But it's also 9 pitches over the course of 67 appearances or something. Like, we're not talking about, a fundamental issue. You know, we know at this point, it's 2020. We know how fluky home run totals can be when you're talking about 200 innings, let alone 60-ish innings. And the issue for him really was the home runs. There was an increase in walk rate as well, but for the most part, it was just he couldn't keep the ball in the yard. I'm pretty much willing to write off last year. I'm not expecting 2018 again, but I wasn't expecting 2018 in 2019. And I was fading him hard. Not this time last year, but,
before the season.
In the before times, 15 months ago. Because you don't want to pay for last year's best reliever, especially if it was a breakout. That's why I'm not drafting Liam Hendricks this year. But that doesn't mean I don't think he was very talented. I still think he's very talented, and I think he's being discounted too much. Yes, he may lose the job. Yes, he may have that issue again. I think the most likely outcome is you're getting a very, very good reliever for a huge discount.
I wonder, okay, so he threw his slider about a third of the time. And of course, the home runs did the most damage. He also had a .297 batting average against on the slider. It was up from .121 the year before, .121 to .297. I mean, .297 on an off-speed pitch is awful, no matter who you are.
Yeah. And, but the thing there is he only had 22 hits allowed on the pitch. Of them were home runs.
9 of them were. Okay. Yeah. That's what I was curious about. Okay. I think we'll know pretty early on with Edwin Diaz whether he's going to bounce back or not. If
it was 6 home runs, sorry. So,
okay.
22 hits, 16 of them were not home runs.
If he blows a couple saves the first week of the season, particularly if it's home runs allowed on the slider, it's probably done. Probably done, right? If he makes it through those first couple weeks, gets 4 or 5 saves, certainly if he makes it through that whole first month, he probably has his leash back at that point and can afford a blown save here or there. So it's just, I don't know if that's a good sign, if that's good news or bad news, the fact that we'll find out pretty early whether or not we can count on him to be the Mets save source this year. It just depends on the way you look at it. I think since the investment in him is still fairly high, it's bad news. But, I think that's ultimately going to be the way it plays out.
I think it's worth saying that my expectation, at least, is that every closer, besides maybe 3 or 4 of them, is going to have a much shorter leash than they would in the past, because every game lost in 2020, assuming we get that 82-game season, counts for more than a game lost in previous years. Your margin for error is going to be much slimmer. And so this is something where when you're talking about the 2020 season, like, the shorter schedule is bad news for the better teams because it introduces more variance, it introduces less predictability, and you're not going to be able to say, well, we'll give him a month, because a month is a third of the season now. Whereas in the past, a month is a sixth of a season and maybe 10 appearances for a reliever. So I think all relievers are more risky, which to me sort of flattens the curve a little bit. Not the best.
Interesting choice of words.
Yeah. But flattens the distribution, of expectations in terms of who might lose their job, which I think helps Edwin Diaz,
yeah,
if that makes sense, relative to the rest of the closers.
Yeah, it seems as though I've done a 180 on Edwin Diaz, at least comparing our rankings, Scott, because in our Roto relief pitcher rankings, I have Edwin Diaz 9th and you have him 14th. So I guess I'm a little bit more optimistic about him, but it's, you know, once you get outside the top 10, I mean, there's all these relievers you kind of have some kind of concern about. Craig Kimbrell, Raisel Iglesias. For me, I have Liam Hendricks outside my top 10. So I feel like
I got Iglesias buried, man. I got him 25th. Nothing to do with that guy anymore.
Oh, man. I think we have a little bit of a rankings debate on Raisel Iglesias coming up soon. So we got to make that happen. But Scott, are you ready to spin that wheel?
Yeah, let's spin it.
Let's spin it. Let's see where we land. And it is on the most fun team in baseball this year, the Pittsburgh Pirates.
Ah, the Pittsburgh Pirates. First name that came to mind was Colin Moran. Is that good enough? No, I probably need a different
for,
one.
For our NL only players out there.
Yes. All right, Chris Archer.
Oof, Chris Archer, man. This is another one. I feel like we could just let Chris go and he could just, you know, do a whole podcast on Chris Archer alone. The ADP is at 270.8 when it comes to Chris Archer, and it feels like years now that we've been waiting for Archer to bounce back. Oh, but he's been working on his changeup in the spring. Well, we've heard that once. You've heard it a million times. The ERA.
The changeup doesn't matter.
The changeup didn't
matter when he was good. The changeup won't matter now.
It's all about the slider. It just comes down to the slider for Chris Archer. It's his best pitch by far. The fastball is not a good pitch while, you know, he throws it decently hard. He can't really command it. It gets hit hard. The ERA for Archer has been over 4 for 4 straight seasons. Last year was the season I finally bought in because it was the first time that he was barely a top 30 starting pitcher. So I was like, all right, I'll take the crack on Chris Archer in 2019 because he wasn't, you know, the fourth, fifth round pick that he had been basically every other year leading up to last season. It did not work out, Chris. It was quite bad for Chris Archer, but I have a feeling you think that there's an opportunity for a bounce back here.
So the Pirates got rid of Ray Searidge. And I think that's where it starts, because one of the things that Ray Searidge had a lot of success with in his time when he was successful as the Pirates pitching coach was in simplifying a lot of pitchers' approaches and in specifically getting them to throw a lot of sinkers low in the zone. And what that does is creates more contact and preferably more weak contact. You know, I think the prime example for this would be Ivan Nova, who totally turned his career. I mean, I don't even think there was a turn his career around before that. He was not fantasy viable, and he had a couple of really solid years with the Pirates. Chris Archer is not a sinker thrower. He has experimented with it in the past, and it just has never worked out for him. He is a guy who was probably ahead of the curve in terms of where baseball has gone in pitcher approaches. He was high fastballs, sliders out of the zone. And about halfway through last season, he ditched the sinker and saw much better results. Over his last 12 starts in specific, he had a 4.65 ERA. Yes, that's bad. But he had a 3.83 FIP, a more manageable 1.35 home run per nine, and was an elite strikeout pitcher. You know, it was around 30% strikeout rate. I think with Ray Searidge gone, with a more analytically driven approach to the Pirates pitching staff as a whole, I think he's going to really be a useful player. He's not going to be an ace. Don't expect that. And I know a lot of you guys probably listening just groan when you hear Chris Archer's name because he's burned so many people. I've said it many times. You should be like the guy from Memento. You need to just not have a memory, especially when it comes to players' names. Chris Archer has burned you, so you hate the name Chris Archer. Well, don't care about the name. This is a guy who has a ton of strikeout ability, will not be super helpful in ERA or WHIP, but hopefully will be manageable and should be, in my opinion, a viable fantasy starting pitcher as a result.
Yeah, I just feel like the upside might be just viability at this point. I think the K per nine will be very high. It was very high when he ditched the sinker last year. It was 12.3 per nine over his last 9 starts. Very high. They were short starts with a lot of walks, with an ERA well over four, and he's on one of the worst teams in baseball. So what is he going to give you? I don't think very many wins. I don't think a good ERA or whip. The strikeout total should be decent, but if he's, you know, if he's so inefficient that he's rarely going more than six innings, it's even the strikeout total might be kind of underwhelming compared to the rate. It might be like a Joey Lucchese situation, I feel like, for Chris Archer next year. And that has its uses. It's not somebody I'm going to be excited to draft next or this upcoming season.
Yeah, I still feel like, Chris, what's the best case scenario for Chris Archer? I still feel like it's probably an ERA around four, a 1.25 whip.
I definitely disagree that the best case scenario is an ERA around four. Like,
it's just that he hasn't been better than that for so long.
Sure, but I think the biggest part of that was a really bad approach, and I think he's going to have a better approach this year. And I mean, you're talking about best case scenario. I think best case scenario is probably a 3.5 ERA. It would require things going right, but it's not at all out of the realm of possibility.
Doesn't it give you pause? Doesn't it give you pause that the Rays couldn't even figure him out? Who are regarded as one of those organizations who can normally figure these types of things out?
It was a pretty good fantasy option with the Rays, but
he was, but his ERA even then, I remember
his ERA wasn't great.
It was every year we would look at the XFIP and the peripherals.
He was pretty good
in
the way Trevor Bauer was pretty good last year.
Oh gosh,
you know, top 30, top 40 type starting pitcher.
That's unfair.
How is it unfair?
Trevor Bauer was pretty awful last year.
Where did he finish in the rankings?
I don't know. He threw a ton of innings, but he had like a 4.6 ERA.
Trevor Bauer was... I can't figure this out because I'm not going to try and count down the list. But
Chris Archer in 2016 and 2017 had a 4.0 ERA. That was in a league where the league ERA was about 4. So it was about average. The whip, probably again about average. He wasn't helping you in those, but he wasn't hurting you a ton. It wasn't great for a fantasy starting pitcher, but given the amount of strikeouts he had, it was fine. I think that's what I expect this year. I expect a return to that, which is a very useful fantasy pitcher.
Chris, do you have access to my rankings? Because I think that you moved Chris Archer up my rankings without me knowing.
No, that's not something I probably could do it, but it would require, I don't remember even how I would.
Scott has ranking. Scott has Archer SP87. I have him SP65. I don't remember being excited about Chris Archer. So speaking of massaging the rankings, Scott, I think I got to go in there and massage my own rankings a little bit as well.
You do that.
Yeah. So I've got to move Chris Archer down a little bit there because I'm not the biggest fan. I think he should probably be closer to that 80 range. I like Eovaldi and Matt Shoemaker more than Chris Archer at this point.
I don't understand that. is the way I would put that. Because like Matt Shoemaker had like 5 good starts last year. And his career has
better
been
than Chris Archer.
Lot worse than Chris. I mean, Chris Archer probably had a good 5-start stretch last year too. Chris Archer's career has been a lot better than Matt Shoemaker.
Nate Eovaldi is just another one. I just can't quit him. It's the 2 years ago. I think Eovaldi could get back to what he was doing 2 years ago, and that would make him very viable.
I like Nathan Eovaldi, but I think it's a similar case to Chris Archer. You look at his career, outside of one season, he was always a disappointment. He was always someone who had high ERAs, low strikeouts. Like Chris Archer's track record is much stronger than Nathan Eovaldi's.
Fair, but he's also been worse for longer, I feel like. ERA over 5 last year, Chris.
Yeah, we're kind of giving Nate Eovaldi credit for not pitching much the last 2 years, I feel like, in that.
Is that wrong?
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, he had a 5.99 ERA last year.
I think the longer you go off in the wrong direction, the less confidence I have in you turning it around.
I mean, Nate Eovaldi had a 4.26 ERA in 2018, 12 start and 10 starts with the Rays. Had a 3.33 ERA in 12 starts with the Red Sox. That's really good.
He was very good with the Red Sox.
It's basically been 12 good starts in his career, though. Like 2013, he had a low-ish ERA, but the peripherals were really bad. Give me Chris Archer over Nathan Eovaldi. That's not to say I don't like Nathan Eovaldi, but...
Yeah. No, I mean, I have Chris Archer over Eovaldi, too. I don't think I like Eovaldi, apparently.
All right. Agree to disagree. MLB Team Word Association. We got to a whopping six teams, so... Maybe we can revisit this again at some point, but I do have a few things that I want to promote, and then we'll get to some of your questions. First, a reminder to everybody that golf is back. Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Tom Brady, and Peyton Manning are battling it out on the links this weekend. Join the First Cut podcast all week long as they preview the match. Champions for charity, prop bets, course breakdown, plenty of goat talk, and more. The guys are hitting that record button for their instant reaction pod as soon as the final putt drops on Sunday. So how about you join them by downloading and subscribing to the First Cut Golf Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you like to listen. Again, that's the First Cut Golf Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Also, want to remind everybody that we have a podcast intro competition currently taking place here on Fantasy Baseball Today. You have until Friday, May 29th, to submit an intro for the pod. Keep it between 30 and 60 seconds. No copyrighted music or drops. I'll choose the three best and we'll vote right here on the podcast. The winner will earn an entry into one of our podcast leagues. And last but not least, I've been slacking with the team name Tuesday, admittedly, so send some of those bad boys in. We'll chat about them on tomorrow's show, fantasybaseball@cbsi.com. Our first question, this one comes from Angel Vasquez. Hey guys, do you think that teams will go to a four-man rotation considering the schedule is shortened and there will be more of an emphasis to win as many games as possible? Chris, this is kind of what you were talking about earlier with the leash for relievers being shorter. Do you think that we could potentially see a four-man rotation as well?
No, I don't think there's any chance we'll see a four-man rotation. I actually don't hate the idea if it was like four-man rotation, have them throw 80 pitches every time, but I don't think that's what we're going to see. I think we're going to see reduced workloads for starting pitchers overall, not increased ones. I think we'll see, especially the first month, we're going to see a lot of guys not even getting to 80 pitches. Because one thing we're seeing in KBO right now has been a rash of early season injuries. And that's going to be a real, real concern with guys starting up their training, stopping it, and then starting it back up again with a brief spring training. So I'm expecting less work overall from starters, maybe not from your elite pitchers, but certainly from everyone else.
Yeah, that was something we mentioned last week too, where if an injury strikes once spring training starts back up, I mean, it's magnified because it's a shorter season. So something that would normally be, you know, a 2 week in IL stint, that, you know, 2 weeks out of 162 game season, all right, that's fine, we can live with that. But in an 81 game season or 82 games, whatever it might be, there's going to be much more emphasis on those injuries, and they're going to hurt a lot more in fantasy this season. So just something to keep in mind. This next one comes from Ryan in Omaha. This is a question mostly for Frank, but also kind of for Scott, because apparently you have outlawed SPARPs or RPASPs in one of your 10-team leagues as well, Scott.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Frank, you mentioned a few times that you've outlawed the SPARPs and RPASPs in your home league. My daily lineup 14-team head-to-head points league has done the same. You've also mentioned that you allow only closers in the RP spots. Does this truly mean you only allow closers, or is it any type of RP? He goes on to ask about bulk relievers being allowed in our RP spots. And at least in my league, I can't speak for everybody, but in mine, we do not allow followers, bulk relievers. It's just closers and setup men. I believe you get 2 points for a hold in my points league, and it's 5 points for a save. So you can have setup guys, you can have closers in there, but you can't have bulk relievers, something like what the Rays have used recently. We have outlawed them. Scott, I don't know about for how your league handles the bulk relievers.
Well, so you're talking about like Ryan Yarbrough, right?
Yeah.
That gets into a sticky situation because how do you know going into the appearance whether he's technically going to start or relieve, and are the points removed if he starts? I'm not exactly sure how that would work.
Yeah, no, that's a fair question.
It hasn't become an issue because every team is limited to 7 starts in a given scoring period. There's a weekly start limit. But I just realized we actually did away with that rule that you could only start true relievers in the relief pitcher spot. You can start Sparps there now. Just there's rarely incentive to do it because you can get 7 starts just from your 5 starting pitcher spots.
You'd rather have
the potential for a guy to get saves there.
One thing that you can do in a CBS commissioner league is adjust the scoring based on the position that player is played in, I'm pretty sure, at least.
You can subtract points for games started. You could do things like that.
Right, but I think you could make it so that it's just for relief pitchers.
Let's get those Sparps out of here. Anti-Sparp life.
Yeah, what you could do is like, lower points for game start or boost the value of a save or a hold and do like negative points for innings. So that way the overall effect could be the same. So that's something just to keep in mind.
Fair enough. This next one's from RBSCBY2321. That was fun. Hey, guys. I play in a 16-team, 30-man roster, dynasty, head-to-head points league with salaries. $260 budget, and every player goes up $1 each year. Would you make this trade? Give up a $16 Miguel Sano to get a $7 Dustin May. What do you think, Scott?
I don't think I would make that trade. 16 team league, $16 seems like a pretty good price for Sano, and I'm not sure May is going to get good enough fast enough to justify the price tag he's already at. I think there would need to be a bigger gap in the salaries there for me to be tempted to do that.
You know, Scott, I just looked up our top 300 rankings in head-to-head points leagues. We have Miguel Sano in exactly the same spot.
Wow.
One player number 112 worth $9 in an auction. Interesting.
Wow, I can't believe you guys are copying each other's rankings.
I guess Scott has a better claim that I copied his rather than he copied mine, considering his were published first. Chris, how about you? Would you rather have Miguel Sano $16 or Dustin May $7?
Yeah, Sano there.
Sano, yeah, I would agree with that. It's
I
a little bit higher than you want, but he's more of a difference maker. Than Dustin May.
Yeah, that's the thing I struggle with Dustin May is I'm not sure if he's really got fantasy ace potential. And I mean, obviously there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Every single pitcher technically has fantasy ace potential, but you know, I don't know if the most likely or, you know, third most likely outcome for him is he's a top 12 perennial starting pitcher for fantasy.
Plus, how long is it going to take the Dodgers to give him an opportunity? I mean, waited this long, and it seems like we're finally getting Julio Urias. I don't know if I'm saying I keep messing
and
up
the
Urias.
The thing about it is he might not be in line for 150-plus innings until 2022 now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, obviously not this year. And
I mean, he did throw like 160 last year. Maybe 140 last year, but still, it's the Dodgers. They'll be safe with everyone.
Keep Miguel Sano. This final one comes from Max in Chicago. So Martin, Pryor, Mullaney, and Casher.
Those sound like comedians, right?
That is correct.
That was.
I just assumed Steve it was Mark
Martin,
Pryor,
Richard. Steve Martin, Richard Pryor, John Mulaney, and I have no idea who Casher is.
I don't know who Casher is either.
So I looked this up, and apparently it's Moshe Casher.
Okay.
I don't know anything about that, but they are all comedians. Speaking of comedians, Chris might consider himself one. based on this email.
Whoa.
After the 2020 MLB season, is Chris going to give all season results half weight and change his slogan to 162 game samples are more predictive than 81 game samples?
I mean, yeah.
It's basically what you say now.
It is a joke, but also, yeah, man, throw 2020 stats away for the most part. This is going to be a weird season. We've talked about it a lot. You're not going to be able to take very much out of this season at all. And if you want to argue with me, go back and look at who was leading things in through 81 games last season, and it'll tell you that weird things can happen in a full season, let alone a half season. Half season is going to be, it's going to be nuts. We're going to have like, I don't know, Luis Arraez is going to hit 394 like Tony Gwynn did in 1994. It's going to be weird stuff.
Yeah, this whole season, the 2020 season, should just be sponsored by Stranger Things. It should be like the official season of the show Stranger Things, and that'll be what's going to happen here in 2020. But that'll wrap it up for today here on a Monday, Fantasy Baseball Today. For Scott and Chris, I am Frank. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. Bye-bye.